Good people of the internet, my name is Pumalangama, and this is Things You Might Need to Hear Today. In today's episode, we're going to talk about a student named Jack. So, in the 1980s, a young student from Hangzhou, a city in eastern China, applies to Harvard Business School, right? And a few months later, he receives a decision letter from Harvard. And he's thinking, this is going to be the one, this has to be it. This is going to be the letter that changes everything. Instead, he gets a, we regret to inform you that he stops reading. I mean, what's even the point? This wasn't any old letter. This was his 10th rejection letter from Harvard, and he was done. So instead, he enrolls in a teacher's college. He fails the entrance exam 3 times, and then he finally passes. Because, I mean, maths was never his strong suit. Is it strong? Do we say strong suit or strong suite? Anyway, after graduating, he teaches in a university, and his salary is incredibly low, like $14 a day low. So he applies for other jobs, but no matter which position he applies for, the outcome is always the same. Across the world, though, something incredible is happening. A new technology is being built and tested and built, and a man named Tim Berners-Lee is hacking away at his computer. So at the time, Jack was dabbling in entrepreneurship. He was running a translation company with a friend. He was dabbling in stocks and working on a couple of other projects. But he was running this translation company because he had studied English in university. But he had also studied international trade. Now, remember this detail because that'll be important later on. In 1995, he goes to the US representing his city's government, and while he's there, he encounters the internet. Jack finds it fascinating. He's hooked. I mean, there's just something about it. But could he really risk it? Jack, listen, you don't have anything to lose. While in America, he searches the internet for trade information on China, and at this time, the internet was really just a series of government web pages and trade information. So he searches for trade information on China, and nothing pops up. Chinese beer. How to get Chinese beer in America. Chinese trade pages. Nope, got nothing for you. Weird, right? This is exactly what Jack's thinking. Even though China wasn't the economic superpower it is today, Made in China was still a thing. China was experiencing its first wave of economic transformation at the time. So, what does Jack do? Jack does what any entrepreneur would do. He gathers some of his best mates and he tells them his idea. But most of them are skeptical. Look, Jack, I just don't think it's going to work, but let's just stick to whatever we're doing right now. Eventually we'll make it. And Jack is getting frustrated. Okay, look, let me speak to him. Jack, listen, dude. You don't know anything about computers. Stop being silly. This just doesn't make sense. Jack, dude, what is this internet thing? Like, sounds like a scam to me. My advice is Jack tunes them all out. Behind closed doors, though, people start speaking about him. Jack's a little different. He's a little crazy. The thing he needs to understand is people like him don't become successful. Right, Jack's just not smart enough to pull this off. He's always been a troublemaker. Now, Jack goes knocking door to door and gets businesses to sign up. He sits with business owners, he takes pictures of their product and uploads them to the internet. He actually had to send the information over to America, where he had a friend who would upload all of this information onto China Pages, which was hosted in America at the time. But Jack was just one man and he can't work fast enough. This part actually reminded me of Brian Chesky and Airbnb's origin story. It seems like every great entrepreneurship story starts with some kind of manual labor, whether it's consistently speaking to customers or packing orders. So China Pages, Jack's company, gets bought out by the local Chinese government and is forced to merge with a local telecom. Imagine, after all of that labor, crazy. I'd be so upset if that happened. And of course, Jack is forced to find a job. Right, so Jack is forced to find a job, but he's an entrepreneur at heart, and he decides that internet companies shouldn't be run by the government. He believes that they should be private, and so he starts over. Jack knew what he had to do. China Pages to him was just the testing ground. With all the knowledge that he had acquired, with going from door to door, speaking to customers, speaking to business owners, he knew that this next business was going to be the real thing. It was now or never. So in the morning, he wakes up and applies for a $3,000 bank loan. But remember how little he was earning before as a worker. Right, so every bank he goes to says, well, you can imagine what they say. Look, Jack, you seem like a great guy, but there's no way that we can help you. So it's just back and forth, bank after bank, and it went on for 3 months. So, of course, Jack feels incredibly defeated. And he thinks, if he can't get the money from a bank, where else can he get it from? What about VC money? Venture capitalists are always looking for investment opportunities, and a couple had emailed him while he was running China Pages. So he begins having meetings with every venture capitalist who will listen to him. But after a while, it's pretty useless. I mean, how could 40 of them say no? Look, Jack, you seem like a really amazing guy. That's my impression of a venture cap. Okay. Look, Jack, you seem like a really he cuts them off. There's really no use. And I think most people would have given up at this point, but not Jack. Jack was intimate with rejection at this point. I mean, he had applied to Harvard 10 times. Job applications over 30. Bank loans 3 months and no loan. VCs, 40. And each one of them had said no. So Jack understands rejection. And by now you figured out that Jack was pretty much obsessed with this idea. The kind of obsession that makes the most successful CEOs. The kind that involves singular focus. So Jack knew that with time, with focus, and with hard work, they could make this company incredible. And then a breakthrough happens. One founder agrees to put in a small amount, and then another VC, and then another, and after some time, Jack and his team gather $50,000 across 18 VCs. Like, oh my God! Oh my God! Okay, so it's 1999 and it's time to build Alibaba. The team sets up shop in Jack and his wife Kathy's small apartment in Hangzhou. They work tirelessly day and night. And Alibaba is now up and running. But many people look at Alibaba and think, Jack, the business model could be better. You guys could be doing a lot more. And the team themselves expect profits to come bursting through the roof. I mean, everybody thought that they were going to be rich off of this new technology called the internet. But the first year comes and goes, and the new company is still in the red. Not a single dollar in sight. Had he been wrong? I mean, had Jack been wrong? No. He had to prove to himself that he was right. He had to prove to all of those VCs, to the banks, to Harvard, that they'd made a mistake, that he was right, and that he should trust his instincts. So finally, after 3 years of blood and sweat and tears, Alibaba makes a profit. 3 years. 3 years. Let that sink in. This would be considered madness to some, but to Jack, it was an itch that needed to be scratched. Are you a millionaire? An Australian journalist asked him once in an interview in the 2000s. And the smile doesn't leave Jack's face, but you can feel his pain, even through the grainy interview footage. He's in pain. It's tough running a business that's not profitable. Now? No. Do you want to be? Trick question. So, what was it that was driving Jack all along? What had possessed him? I think it was that he knew he was solving a real problem. On a daily basis, Jack was receiving many customer emails. Customers saying, hey, thanks for doing this and thanks for starting Alibaba. We can't pay you, but we want you to know that we really appreciate the work that you're doing. And what's the most important story? What's the most important part of the story for entrepreneurs? To me, it's really working hard, but working hard on the right thing. And also working hard with the right team, solving a real problem and talking to your customers consistently. So yeah, it's those four things: working hard on the right thing, working with the right team, solving a real problem and talking to your customers, building with your customers. Okay, so in 2000, Jack and his team raised a round from an investor of $5 million. And then they raise another round from SoftBank of $20 million. So Alibaba comes from the tale of Alibaba and the 40 Thieves, right? And Alibaba's success is really based on providing access to wholesale markets. They open a whole new world. Don't you dare close your eyes. They open this whole new world and act as a bridge between China and the rest of the world. And that's just Alibaba. There's still the value of Taobao and Alipay, which are subsidiaries of Alibaba that we need to talk about. So that journalist who asked, are you a millionaire? That's my best Australian accent. No, he's not a millionaire. He's a billionaire. He's worth $37 billion, to be exact. And today, Alibaba is worth more than eBay and Facebook, and has really revolutionized how companies do business. You can't tell the story of China's economic rise without telling the story of Jack. And that's the house that Jack built.
In Asia, wherever you go on the street, like in Shanghai, Hong Kong, Beijing, all the young people talk about the internet and think about set up an internet business. So the fever of internet right now in Asia is trying to catch up to the U.S.
Are you a millionaire?
Now?
No. Do you want to be?
I hope if it could be naturally if I can be.
Thanks so much for listening. I'll catch you in another episode of Things You Might Need to Hear Today. I hope you have a fantastic week. Keep being you. Keep being great. Peace.